Chapter 5. Adam and Emma walk the half mile from their home to that of their neighbors and friends, Julian and Laurel Eastman, down the well-traveled path through the woods. It was dusk, and they could hear the faint rumbling of an approaching thunderstorm. The pine-infused air carried a fresh touch of ozone. They did not bring umbrellas because they knew that the storm would be over by the time they left the Eastmans to return home. One day before, they would not have noticed the gentle cricket songs echoing among the trees, but today they did and wondered if there were actual crickets joining the chorus. It was an alien and confounding possibility. They'd grown up with the soundtrack of Abacus, never thinking about the source until the incident with the toad. They knew that 100 years ago, John Sovereign, in his wisdom, had strived to create an environment that was supportive of human mental health. But the manufactured sounds and breezes and smells of Abacus were the attributes of home to them, not something to be explored. There was nothing organic causing them. They simply were and always had been, until now. Tonight might have been a night like any of the other countless nights they had spent at the houses or on the porches of friends, if they were not carrying with them this new, astounding knowledge that they were not sure they should share. They struggled with a contradiction of emotions. Their instinct was toward wonder and joy, and with it an overwhelming desire to run through the streets of Abacus to tell everyone they could find that there were, by some stunning unknown phenomenon, living things existing, other earthlings that had been thought to be extinct for a century. But there was also fear. Fear that had slipped into Abacus like a disease when John Sovereign's grandson had dropped his first name and taken his place as leader. As Adam and Emma had hurried back home after Emma's brush against the dome, they spoke quietly and quickly. "He wouldn't," Emma questioned, her voice trailing off. "I doubt it, Em. We're well known. It would draw too much attention." "It's not like he hasn't obliterated for less." "I'm well aware. You're one of the few people he tolerates. I think we'll be okay." By the time they got home, Sovereign's people were already there with their electric ATVs. Adam and Emma set their baskets down on the lawn as they approached the house. "Adam, Emma." The man took off his gloves and reached for Adam's hand. His colleagues simultaneously reached for Emma's. "Hello, Andre. How's your mother?" "Good afternoon, Micah." Adam found it odd that they needed leather gloves for a 2-mile trip on an ATV. Leather was not a renewable resource. The gloves had to have come from the repository, same as his Polaroid film. "My mother is fine, thank you for asking. However, as you know, we are here representing Sovereign on a serious matter, and we will need to confine the conversation to that for the rest of our visit." Andre looked uncomfortable, and he pushed his thick, dark hair back away from his face and combed through it with his fingers. They had known him since he was a child, with paste on his face, taking art classes that a teenage Emma taught for fun. "Take a seat on the porch." He pointed like a frustrated parent. They walked up the wide stone steps past the large pots overflowing with red geraniums Emma and Adam tended together. Fallen petals lined their footfalls. Emma indicated the chairs encircling a small table, but while Adam and Emma took their seats, Andre and Micah remained standing. "Emma, we need to know exactly what happened this afternoon. Why was thread security breached?"
It wasn't a big deal. We were collecting walnuts so I could make paint for Sovereign's portrait. I went chasing after a stray one, and my head brushed the dome when I bent down to pick it up." She shocked herself by leaving out the most important part. She hadn't planned on it. It just happened. She didn't dare even glance at Adam. "Is that the whole story?"
"That's the whole story. Pretty boring." Emma smiled at him. He did not smile back. He looked tired,
and a little scared, she thought. Micah was leaning against the porch rail looking at his shoes. Andre turned to Adam. Adam, do you concur?
Yes, that's exactly how it happened. We were collecting the nuts. The tree is quite near the perimeter. Emma bent down to collect a nut and her hair brushed the membrane. Open and shut case, and Adam smiled at him too.
I hope you two understand how serious this is. The threads are the only thing separating us from oblivion. It doesn't get any more serious. You mess with the threads, you put every human being in existence at risk. Now, I'm going to recommend Sovereign take no action, but I can't guarantee that he won't. You're lucky that he has a personal relationship with you. I honestly don't think you comprehend how lucky that is. My suggestion to you is that you make sure, by whatever means possible, that this does not happen again. Avoid that sector for a while. Adam and Emma nodded at him, and Andre suddenly slammed his hand down on the table violently before them, startling them both. Emma gasped. "Do you understand what I'm telling you?" he bellowed.
"Yes, yes, we understand," they both responded.
They were terrified, and they both knew that this had been Andre's intention. Apparently, no one was exempt from Sovereign's wrath. They got the message. Andre stared at them for a moment and then stood up straight and turned to go. He motioned to Micah with his head, and they descended the steps and started towards their bikes. Adam and Emma sat frozen in their seats, and Andre paused in the yard and turned to address them again.
If we have to come back out here for something else, it's not going to end the same way. I don't care who you are. At least one of you will be coming back to Sovereign with us. No joke.
Adam and Emma remained silent and watched as he turned away, mounted his machine, and the two drove off, leaving a cloud of dust wafting like smoke in the golden light of late afternoon. Adam turned and looked at Emma. He realized his heart was pounding and he was suddenly feeling weak. He saw Emma's hand trembling and he took it in his and pressed it to his lips and then held it in his lap.
"Why didn't you tell them what we saw?" he asked her quietly.
I don't know. I think it was instinctual. Everything inside me screamed not to." She turned towards him.
"Adam, if this, what we saw by the black walnut tree today, had happened in the days of John Sovereign or Seth and Sandra, it would have been a cause for celebration. Not now. Something is really, really wrong. Can you feel it?"
"Of course I feel it, Em. It's permeating everything. But I feel powerless."
"Do you think I should have told?"
He brushed a hair away from her face.
"No, I don't. I'm glad you didn't."
He sighed and looked out across the yard. "We should go to Julian and Laurel's gathering tonight. It would be good to be among friends and hear some laughter and music. We're okay for now. Tonight, there's nothing we can do."
"I agree we should go, but Adam, I don't think we can tell Laurel what happened today, at least not about me brushing against the threads."
He raised his eyebrows. "I thought she was doing better."
"She is. Julian convinced her to have the party, but she's still very fragile. I hate keeping things from her, but I think if she knew what happened today, it would push her over the edge. Maybe we can talk to her about it privately, but certainly not while she's hosting a party."
Adam nodded and stood, his chair scraping across the floor. As the wooded path neared the Eastmans, the sound of crickets merged with the sound of guitars, laughter, and singing, until, as they emerged from the path into the yard, the sounds of the party forced the crickets into the background. The fieldstone path to the porch was lined with luminarias, creating an otherworldly glow as the sky darkened. The porch was nearly obscured by huge bushes of blue hydrangeas and pink hibiscus, but Laurel spotted her friends emerging from the woods and ran across the yard to meet them.
"I'm so glad you're okay," she blurted. "I saw Sovereign's people on the way to your house. I've been absolutely sick over it all day."
She looked around as Julian jogged up to them.
He threw one heavily muscled arm around each of his friends and pulled them close. "What's going on?" he asked. "To say we've been worried would be an understatement." "Hey, Jules," answered Emma. "It was nothing. Everything is fine. We had a little confusion out by the threads. All is well." Julian and Laurel looked concerned. Before they could speak, Adam put his hands on their backs and began steering them towards the house. "You know, guys, we could use some fun. Let's join the party. We can talk later." "Julian, catch!" Two young boys were throwing a glowing ball in the dusky light. Julian leapt up and grabbed the high and wide pitch and tossed it back to them. As Adam and Emma climbed the porch steps, they were met by the smiles, greetings, and waves of several of their friends and neighbors. Nestor and Ping, who ran the gallery that frequently showed their work, lit up to see two of their favorite artists and came forward to greet them. "Adam! Emma!" They exchanged warm embraces. "We're just running out back for a game of horseshoes before the storm starts, but we want to talk." "Yes," Ping added. "We have an idea for a joint show, and I'm dying to show you the Wind Bullock Platinum prints I've been working on. They're stunning." "What's your favorite?" "Child on Forest Road." "That's a brilliant image. I'd love to see them, Nestor. We'll make a date." They moved towards a group that was gathered with guitars and other instruments around the large hammered copper fire pit built into the floor. Above them hung a huge copper chimney. The gray clouds gathering overhead darkened the porch and made the glow from the fire and the warm reflections from the copper even more vibrant and welcoming. The floor around the fire pit was a magnificent swirling mosaic in shades of gold, silver, and copper. Julian had built these things himself in the metal shop behind the house. He saw Adam admiring his work. "Hey, Adam, look, you'll like this," he called out, waving him over to the far corner of the porch. "I'm working on the columns now." Adam saw that they were partially covered with a similar pattern. "Do you have time one day soon to help me get a couple more barrels of slugs from the repository?" Sure thing. I need to pick up film anyway. Just tell me when." He heard the clink of a horseshoe hitting the pole and the cheers of the spectators and smiled. After their experience that afternoon, Adam wanted to stay close to Emma. He looked across the porch and saw her laughing with their friend Dady, who was idly strumming the guitar perched on his crossed legs. She caught Adam's eye and smiled her gentle smile at him, and he could see the uncertainty that still lingered behind her eyes. He wanted to be holding her in his arms. He patted Julian on the arm and started to turn towards Emma. "Adam, wait!" Julian grasped Adam's arm with his strong, work-hardened hand. I need to talk to you. It's important." Adam could see by the look in his eyes that he could not walk away. He shrugged to Emma as Julian led him from the porch and towards the metal shop. As they stepped off the back steps of the porch, the wind suddenly picked up and there was a loud clap of thunder. The rain began with a hiss and quickly intensified to a rush and roar. The two men ran the last few yards to the open double doors and into the shop, while the horseshoe crowd dashed for the porch, laughing. It was warm and dry inside and smelled of fire and iron. The forge was still aglow, and Adam sat on the brick ledge and felt the heat at his back and the cold, fresh, saturated storm air before him. It was uniquely pleasant. He waited for his friend to speak. Julian picked up a hammer and twirled it in his hands and leaned against his largest anvil. The hammer spun in his experienced hands almost as if it were a part of him, and in a way, imbued with the heat of his body, it was. Adam kicked at a shiny crescent, partially buried in the dirt floor, and dug at it with the toe of his boot. He bent over and pulled out a gold coin from the soil and cinders that had been tamped down hard by 1,000 boot steps of a strong and driven man. He brushed it off and idly examined it. It had a bearded man on one side, and on the other, a long-legged horned animal with the word Krugerrand above. He stared at the creature. It was bizarrely beautiful. Adam found himself wondering what it smelled like or what its feet sounded like on the ground. Did it move with a graceful sweep or jerky violence? He held the coin up to Julian, who used the hammer to indicate a row of barrels along the back wall. "Third from the left," said Julian. "See if you can make it." Adam flung the coin through the air, and it landed among all the others and the appropriate drum, the soft clink it surely made, lost amid the clamor of the rain. "Well done," smiled Julian. "So, Julian," Adam prompted. "Yeah," Julian hesitated, searching for words. He set the hammer down on the anvil and folded his arms. It's about Laurel. I need to know, Adam, does Emma harass you about getting on the baby list?"
"Well, we've talked about it a little, but harassment? No, it's not like it's something we have any control over."
"I know, but Laurel can't leave it alone."
"Laurel has already had a child. There's no way she'd be approved a second time. When have you ever heard of someone being approved for a second child?"
I know. I don't know what to do about it. She's obsessed with the idea, and she actually is starting to scare me. It's all she can think about. She thinks because she lost Ben, they're going to let her have another one."
"She lost Ben because Sovereign sent him for obliteration. It's not like he was lost in illness or an accident."
"Well, who does that to a 16-year-old kid? He was a good kid." Julian looked around, as if someone were listening in, despite the heavy rain that drilled on the metal roof and dampened any conversation that might escape the shop.
Just be careful what you say, Julian," Adam warned.
I know, only to you. I have to say it, only to you. How much can a person take? She loses her first husband and then her son. I know why this is hitting her. She's 34. She's 34 years old. This is it, her last shot. She wants me to try to influence Sovereign."
"That's crazy," Adam replied, horrified. "Is she willing to risk losing you, too?"
"I know," Julian yelled. He grabbed the hammer and hurled it across the room. "I don't know what to do for her. She says she doesn't want to live if she can't have another child. I love her, Adam. I don't know what to do for her. Scheiße."
Adam stood and moved towards Julian and put his hand on his shoulders. "Settle down now. You're getting loud enough to attract attention. Listen to me, Julian. There are certain realities we all have to live with. We're all that's left of this filthy fucking planet. Abacus can only support so many. The policies have kept the population steady and healthy for 100 years. People who violate the policies have to go."
"I know, Adam, and I understand that bastard husband of hers had to go. His fuck-uppery couldn't be tolerated. But Ben was a child. Do you think Sovereign was right to do that, to obliterate those boys?"
"I don't know why Sovereign does what he does. It's not my job to question him."
Adam returned to his seat at the forge and ran his fingers through his still damp hair. This was not turning out to be the mellow night that he had longed for.
"In all honesty, he terrifies me. People are disappearing all over Abacus. Men, boys, young women, for minor offenses. That's all I'm saying about it, Julian. I'm not stirring up trouble. That's how people disappear. And Emma needs me. I have my photography. It has to be enough. Laurel's going to have to get a grip before the wrong person gets wind of this."
"Yeah, well, I feel like I'm up against a wall here. I have tried reasoning with her, and it just keeps getting worse."
Adam looked up at his old friend and was silent for what felt like a long time, the rain and booming of thunder filling the silence between them. Adam cleared his throat.
"Maybe this will take your mind off your troubles. Something happened today. Something really amazing."
Emma realized her shoulders were up near her ears. She made a conscious effort to release the tension, breathing deeply and rolling her shoulders and stretching her neck first to one side and then the other. The rain fell in silver threads from the edge of the eaves, and the once distant rumbles sounded closer and were starting to synchronize with flashes of light. She realized Dady was watching her. "You okay?" he asked. "I heard you had some excitement today." "Long story, but everything's fine, Dady." She smiled at him, and he hit a ringing chord on his guitar. Emma took a log from the pile near her feet and put it on the fire and watched the shower of sparks rise toward the chimney. The crackling fire added to the pleasant symphony of sounds. The ring of rain and the whirl of wind could be enjoyed from the warm and protected porch with its generous eaves. The murmuring voices and muffled laughter blended with the picking of guitars and mandolins. Emma appreciated the sublime pleasure of the moment. The heat radiating from the fire flushed her face. Dady looked out into the storm for a moment and then scanned the porch for the two young boys who were now playing on the floor. They were setting gold coins on their edges and then spinning others to knock them down, as they all had done as children. "Boys, come here," he called out. The boys scrambled to their feet. "I believe I know this storm. Do you know this storm?" The two boys looked at each other and then back to Dady and shook their heads no. Other adults drew near, and Laurel took the seat next to Emma. There was a large flash of lightning and a crack of thunder. Dady looked around to the other adults. "Ready?" Laurel, Emma, and the others smiled and chuckled to themselves. They stood poised, and then, in perfect synchronization with the storm, they called out, "Flash! Flash! Flash! Boom!" At the boom, everyone stamped their feet to a huge clap of thunder, and the nearest adults grabbed the ribs of the children. The two boys shrieked and then burst into peals of laughter. "How did you do that?" the youngest one cried out. "Now, don't you worry, son. You hang around here long enough, you'll learn the storms, too. There's only a dozen or so." Dady ruffled the boy's hair and then called out a count. Those with instruments started playing a lively tune about rain that paused for every large boom of thunder. There were songs for every storm, but this was one of the favorites. Her face flushed with laughter and the warmth of the fire, Emma turned towards Laurel. Emma's hazel eyes shone and wisps of her black walnut hair, curling wildly from the humidity, escaped the loose ponytail tied with a strip of cotton fabric. Laurel touched her cheek with the back of her hand. "So beautiful," she said. Emma took her hand and kissed it. "How are you doing, my friend?" Emma asked. "I'm doing okay. It was a lovely day. I spent it working in our garden, and then for good measure I went and put in a couple hours at the greenhouse." "Regent?" "Yes, it's the only one I go to these days. I brought back some glorious kale. Have you had any food yet?" "Not yet." Laurel motioned to Emma and led her across the porch to the open front door. As they moved down the long entryway leading to the kitchen, Emma admired the artwork lining the stucco walls, all created by people they knew. Two of Adam's photographs were displayed next to each other. Taken years apart and in completely different sectors of Abacus, they were striking not only on their own merits, but because of their similarity. If you could disconnect your recognition of the content and view the images for their constituent shapes, they were nearly identical. A bemused smile spread across her face as she realized it was these two photographs, seen side by side, that had given her the first tangible clues to her husband's artistry and sent her scrambling through his flat files, laughing as she found link after link like an encoded signature threading through his body of work. Laurel realized she had left Emma behind and returned to stand quietly beside her. "I was with him when he shot this one," Emma said softly, indicating the rightmost image. "Must have been 10 years ago at the building project. There were people working and the air had substance to it, dust and light. I sketched and read and sketched some more and read, and he still wasn't even remotely done. I got so hungry, and he was oblivious. I couldn't speak to him, He was so absorbed. It was almost comical, but also it was uncomfortable. Eventually, a woman that I did not yet know invited me to come to her house and share a meal. She had that wonderful squash stew with the chickpeas and tahini that I make sometimes. That's where I got the recipe. We had warm conversation and laughter, and I didn't return to Adam until the sun was setting. And the moment I walked in the door, he realized I hadn't been there. "The woman," asked Laurel, "do I not yet know her? I feel like I must, because she told you the recipe you've shared with us and we've shared with others. She's threading through our lives." "You have not yet met her, and you might not ever. She had recently moved to our area from the far southeast quadrant after the brother she lived with was sent for obliteration. I took geraniums and I went back to see her a couple of weeks after our encounter, and she was gone. None of the neighbors knew where she was, or at least they wouldn't say." She sipped her wine. "So, as we walked past these images, I also felt the reverberations of the occasions we gave them to you, the joy and the friendship and the sharing. I remember each time. Do you?" "I do," smiled Laurel. I only glanced for a moment, and I was hit with a swell of emotions and memories. It's only now, when talking to you, that I can sort them out. It's amazing the power some objects hold. They took another step, and Laurel pointed to the detailed metalwork framing a square beveled mirror. "Have you seen these yet? This is what Julian has been working on lately." It was exquisite, with delicate, finely detailed acorns and oak leaves, some of them curling or appearing to turn in the wind. It's said that the bullion came from the big bank in New York City. Can you imagine? That whole island is underwater now, but this remnant hangs on our wall. Laurel had always been fascinated with history. "And here, look at this one." She turned to the opposite wall, where there was a matching mirror ringed in finely wrought horse chestnuts and leaves. The seed pods were exquisitely detailed with dozens of perfectly formed spikes. It was beautiful. Emma and Laurel looked at each other in the mirror, and both spontaneously stuck out their tongues, and the action reverberated infinitely in the mirror behind them. Through her laughter, Laurel said, "I asked him to make one for you with flax flowers, like your bracelet." Emma fingered the golden flowers, the only tangible connection she had to her grandmother Lucinda, who died before she was born. She loved how the softly glowing metal took on the warmth of her skin. "Act surprised." They were still laughing as they turned around and found themselves poised before the last image on the wall before the kitchen. It was a portrait of Ben that Emma had completed only 4 months before he was taken away. Before Emma could say a word, Laurel collapsed onto the slate floor, sobbing. Emma sat down and wrapped her arms around her friend, holding her hard against her shoulder, stroking her hair, rocking her, letting her cry. After a couple of minutes, she whispered in her ear, "Come on, old friend, before someone else comes in here, let's go to the kitchen." She stood and helped Laurel to her feet and led her to the sink, where she dampened a cloth and cleaned her friend's face. Laurel struggled to pull herself together. She held the cool cloth to her face for a moment and let out a big sigh. "Some party. I'm sorry, I did not see that coming." "There's no need to be sorry. There was no keeping that wave of feelings inside. Should we have a conversation?" Emma filled two glasses from a wine bottle on the counter. I don't know what to say, especially to you." "Me?" Emma led the way into the living room and sat at the piano, patting the bench beside her. Laurel hesitated a moment and then sat. "You and I were both 34 and childless. I'm having powerful feelings about my expiration date, and I don't feel right crying to you about my desire to have a baby when I've already gotten to experience it and you haven't. And you've been so generous and caring with me through some very, very rough times." Emma was quiet for a moment. "Laurel, our lives run parallel at times, and
They intersect and overlap with the lives of others, and sometimes they take wildly divergent turns from each other. But through it all, our deepest feelings are our truth. They are independent. They don't become more or less true dependent on the situation of others. Laurel stretched her arm across the music rack and rested her forehead there. She caressed a key with her index finger, pressing down with such gentle pressure, the soft pad of the hammer brushed the string and it didn't make a sound. Laurel, Emma put her hand on her friend's hair where it lay between her shoulder blades. She could feel her heart beating. Why don't you play the piano anymore? Ben has been gone for 10 months now. Do you think maybe it's time to try to play again? It was a great joy to you and to all of Abacus. I can't. I think maybe you can. I don't deserve it. Emma was dumbfounded. Don't deserve it? What do you mean? I don't know. It did bring me joy. It's a release, a thing of such beauty. I don't deserve those things anymore. But why? What did you do wrong? I didn't protect Ben. I didn't teach him right. I don't know. I failed. Laurel closed the cover over the keys. Okay, you need to sit up and look at me. She turned and straddled the piano bench. Turn. Laurel straddled the bench and looked at her friend. I will only say this once because we're slipping into dangerous territory here, so you better listen. You can't protect someone from someone else's irrational behavior. You can't see it coming because you're not irrational. Are you talking about Sovereign? Laurel looked over her shoulder and lowered her voice. You think he's irrational? Why? The Sovereigns have kept us safe for nearly 100 years. John Sovereign is the only reason any of us are here. I know, Laurel, and I feel as grateful to John Sovereign and his children as anyone in Abacus, but there is something wrong with the current one. Why would he obliterate Ben and his friends? They were children. He has to keep us safe, Emma. That's his job. Ben shouldn't have gone there. I should have made sure somehow. Do you think that John Sovereign would have obliterated a group of children for playing around near the perimeter? Laurel was silent and looked down at her hands. No, he wouldn't have. Nor would have Seth or Sandra Sovereign. Laurel looked at Emma. A tear escaped down her cheek. Emma grasped her in a tight hug. Honey, you need to let go of this guilt. It is not your fault. And you need to play again. Please, play again. They moved apart and Laurel wiped her face with her sleeve. You should know this. Julian is going to petition Sovereign to let me have another child. What? She whispered. Why would you get involved with him? He's a dangerous man, Laurel. Please don't do this. I don't care. I can't go on like this. I would rather die. She put her cheek against Emma's. I love you, Emma. You have been a true friend to me. I'm sorry if I've caused you pain. Emma felt a deep well of sadness overflowing into her gut. She shook her head no. The two women looked up as they heard the voices of a group of people as they walked down the hall towards the kitchen. Laurel stood. We'd better get back to the party.